Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Eurogamer podcast. I'm Bertie, your host, and every 2 weeks I find another interesting person from the world of games to talk to. Today, an Indonesian writer and designer, best known for Coffee Talk, a very chill, I feel cool saying that, a very chill game about making warm drinks for elves and vampires and werewolves and girls who change into cats and police officers and many more, and talking to them about their lives and whatever problems they may be facing at the time. And surprise, these problems are very like the ones you or I probably have. It's a game that mirrors real life, and it can be, gently, quite profound. You may also know him for his follow-up game, a smaller-scale project called What Comes After. This is a game about a girl who's at her lowest ebb in life and who falls asleep on a train and wakes up in a spirit world, where she will talk with spirits who've departed the world, and in doing so, maybe she'll remember what she likes about it and what she likes about herself. Mohamed Fahmy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was a really amazing intro. Like,
oh, thanks very much.
You describe my game better than I do.
Thank you. So I had missed Coffee Talk when it came out. So I've been playing it this week, actually, in preparation. Nice. So it's fresh in my mind. Did I pronounce your surname okay there?
Yeah, it's true. And just FYI, Indonesian don't really have the concept of first name and last name. So okay. My last name is my nickname.
I see.
Yeah, it's not really my family name. It's my nickname.
Well, I'll let you in on a secret. Bertie's not my real name either.
So. Oh, damn it.
My real name's George. No, it's not. It's Robert. So it kind of gets there. For people who can't see Fahmy, who are listening to this, he sat in a wonderful library almost, surrounded by books and figurines, which I can't quite make out because of the resolution of the camera. But it looks like a room of inspiration. Is this where you write?
Yeah, this is where I sleep, play, work, watch movies. Basically everything except for eating. I don't eat in my room.
And maybe go to the toilet as well.
Are you sure about that? Yeah, I mean, like, I have a toilet, proper toilet at home.
Which is your, do you have a favorite book or a favorite figurine?
So, I'm pretty proud with my Final Fantasy IX collection. So anytime I found new figurines or books, even like some Coca-Cola Final Fantasy collection, I just try to get them all. As for the books, I guess, this is hard because I love it. I think my favorite one is a manga series called Oyasumi Punpun, Good Night Punpun.
Okay.
It's like a pretty existentialist story, but it's funny, dark, and just like it breaks you. Yeah, it's one of my main inspiration too for my games.
Okay. I don't know if that is a recommendation or not. So I was also expecting to see on your camera some cats. Now, I'll explain this because I was looking on your Twitter feed in a researchy way, not a stalkery way, and I saw you talking about cats, about having lots of cats. And by lots of cats, I mean like 27 cats.
Yep. I mean like officially we have one cat.
Right.
And then there's one freeloader who decided to just like give birth twice in our home. So there are like one official cat that is allowed to enter any rooms at home. Right. There are like five or six cats that are allowed to enter the home. And there are around, I think, 15 or 16 cats living on our yard.
Wow, so it's like a tiered membership system.
Yeah, exactly. Social class.
So what I was reading on your Twitter feed was that people have just been turning up and leaving cats.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just because we love cats, they decided to just throw away, not even leaving. They use like a sack in the middle of rain and just like drop the kittens. Kittens, not even cats, kittens. Yeah.
Wow.
The world is crazy, I know.
I can't know if you can see, actually. You can just about see there's a little furry lump just there.
That is
a cat just sleeping just next to me. So how do people know that you like cats? Do they just see them as they walk past, or do you put a sign up somewhere saying we love cats?
I guess because like we have schedule, kind of an official schedule where we just like open the door and like give them food, and some people notice it. Some people walk in front of our house and say, oh yeah, these people love cats. I guess that's why.
So how do you deal with them? Is it comfortable? Are you okay? Or is it too much? Do you need to change this situation?
It's a mixed feeling, I guess, because I don't mind because they are pretty low maintenance. But sometimes if they get sick, I need to take care of them. And it only happens like once or every 2 months. So it doesn't really cost that much. But when it happens, it costs a lot. The food itself, again, the social class thing. We have like, okay, this one is for these cats. This one is for these cats. So that's how we manage the budget to feed everyone.
Well, well done for taking the cats in. I imagine you're giving them a better home and life than they otherwise would. Obviously, the next game you make should be about cats.
It's a cat game. I mean, like I always divide games into two categories: cat person games and dog person games. And all of my games are cat person games, as in it's low maintenance.
I see. So that's the definition.
I mean, like I just try to use them. Like, for example, JRPG is definitely a dog person game.
Oh, and why is that?
You need commitments to play them, right?
Okay.
You need to spend time. You need to like, okay, I'm going to spend 80 hours of my life playing this thing. And if I stop playing it like for a week, I will forget what happened in the game. Games like Coffee Talk, you can just play every day. Every in-game day is like 15 to 30 minutes long. It's very low commitment. It doesn't require much. You don't need to learn anything from the game. You don't need to master the control or anything. And you just enjoy the story.
I see. So it's like a cat just dips in every so often, just comes through and is like, hey. Whereas a dog's like, me all the time.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, I see. Now I understand. So I've made myself a nice warm drink.
Oh, me too.
Okay, so
it's not coffee though.
I've made myself a tea with some honey. It's like a herbal tea, so it's got various ingredients in. What are you drinking?
It's Earl Grey. Yeah.
That seems like a very, I don't know, almost British. Kind of.
It was a gift, and I don't want to drink coffee. I mean, like, it's 8 p.m. here right now, and I should not drink more coffee.
But people in your game drink coffee at, like, midnight.
Oh, yeah, I did, too, but yeah, that's why I have a very bad sleeping schedule, I guess, yeah.
I see. So because I'm drinking a tea, specifically it's something called a yogi tea. It's got rooibos, vanilla, and something else in it.
I think I've had that before, yeah.
Okay, and I've whacked a load of honey in it because everything with honey tastes better, apparently. So what does that say about me? If I'm a character in your game, what character am I, and what does my drink choice say about me?
Well, you want something sweet, but you don't want sugar. I guess I'm just making shit up right now, but feels like you still want the normal thing, but you don't want to do like the bad way people have been doing all this time. Like normally people who wants to drink sweet drinks, they add sugar, but you choose honey. That's the biggest bullshit I just said this weekend.
But it's kind of accurate in a way. So your drink choice, you're drinking Earl Grey. What does that say about you? In fact, forget that for a second. Let's talk about which character you would be in Coffee Talk.
Oh, the answer is super obvious. I literally wrote Freya based on myself.
Okay.
I mean, like, there are like 11 characters and every single one of them are some kind, one way or the other, they are part of me. But I put more of myself in Freya. Even we even shared birthday.
Oh, really? Because yeah. She says all these kind of things through... I was reading some of your short stories on your Medium page. And some of these stories are based in coffee shops. And they're saying the same kind of thing. Like, I know the person who works here. They'll let me stay late if I want to. Now, I don't know if the stories are always about you, but I suppose in part they're kind of about you. And Freya says so many of these things, and she likes to write there. She likes staying up late. So yep. You're Freya. That makes sense.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, for the characters of Coffee Talk, we decided that to make things easier, I wrote the characters kind of based on their astrological sign.
Ah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, Freya was based on myself, but then the other characters,
What's your astrological sign?
Aquarius.
Okay. I don't know much about horoscopes.
I mean, like, people who knows about horoscope will say, of course he is Aquarius.
Okay. I am a Scorpio, for what it's worth.
Oh. So
I know I'm naturally evil, so yeah, be warned. Yeah.
All of my exes are Scorpio, by the way. We're good friends, though.
It's a good job they're exes.
Anyway, yeah, so basically we decided to use... I tried to look the characters in my then colleagues, people who work at Toge, and it's like, hey, I guess Rachel kind of feels like our programmer. So she's kind of based on the... I mean, Rachel might be a different case because she's a real person. Yeah, Rachel in the game is a real person, by the way.
Okay.
And like for this character, I tried to put my colleague, and then we even have like a role play session where I just give them, okay, you're going to talk about this and just talk, and I will record everything and put them in the game.
Oh, wow. Was this a regular thing, or was this a one-off thing?
No, it's kind of regular, but we did this like in the later half of the development because it took me so long to finish writing the stories, right? And we kind of need to find a solution to make the characters feel more believable, because in the early draft of the game, one of the main feedback was all the characters sound the same. Like, we have 11 characters and everyone sounds like me. And that's not a good thing. So that's why we decided to do that role play session in the office.
What was the role play session like? Should we do a role play session right now?
I mean, it's kind of hard to do because what we did back then is I already know the story of the game, right? I already have like the plot of the game. What's going to happen? What will they talk about in the fourth day of the game? And I just like, okay, in day four there will be these characters, so I will call all of my colleagues like, hey, are you free, let's go to the meeting room, and then you will be this character, we're all going to talk about this thing, and just I will record everything, and then I transcribe it and edit it, and it becomes a dialogue in the game.
That's a really good way of doing it. Was it helpful?
Oh man, it's like literally, I think 60% of the game was written that way. 60% of the final version of the game.
It's really nice because, as you mentioned, it must be a problem if you're writing all the characters yourself, because it's just you, right? And you can, as much as you try to be someone else, it's still you being someone else.
Exactly. And it's kind of shown because when we first show the game to other people, they like Freya the most, because that's the most honest character I wrote in the game. That's literally based on myself. She's the easiest character to write. And it kind of shows from the feedback. So that's why we need to have persona based on other people. That's not myself.
So if Freya is based on you, this hanging around in coffee shops and writing. Now, I've never really understood the coffee shop thing. I don't mind coffee shops, but I've never worked in a coffee shop. Can you explain it to me? What's the attraction of a coffee shop? Why do you go there to write?
I guess they just, most coffee shops were designed to be something, someplace that feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Feels calming. It feels, I don't know, relaxing. And that's how I felt about coffee shop anyway. And kind of happens, like, I think it happens around five or six years ago when I started to found a new hobby. So I spent almost every Saturday checking new coffee shops I found online. Until one time I found this one coffee shop, which I then visit regularly up until the pandemic started. Like, I visited this coffee shop every single day. Even so the barista and staff doesn't visit as often as me.
So you became a regular?
Yep.
And they knew your name and they talked to you?
Yep. And I don't even need to order, just like the usual.
What was the usual? 3-shot espresso?
Oh, no. So Indonesia is pretty famous for coffee, right? We have, like, our country is super big, and like every region, every province have their own specialty.
Okay.
So my favorite specialty is from a province called Aceh. It's in the westernmost part of Indonesia. And I asked it to be, so I always say Aceh Tubruk, which means grounded coffee. So they use the Aceh coffee beans, and they left all the grounded coffee beans inside the cup. No filters, no V60 or anything. Just left it under the cup. And that's how I always order. Actually, I even asked my friend, like, so he's not a regular at that coffee shop. I just told him, just say to the barista, Fahmi style. And the barista understood what he meant.
So how do you drink that? So presumably it settles on the bottom like sediment.
Yep.
And you just, okay.
Yeah.
I'll try it. So when you're in the coffee shop,
yep,
Freya talks about writing a story about people in a coffee shop, which I presume is maybe you writing a game about people in a coffee shop. But are you listening to other people's stories? Is that what you
Obviously. Do? Obviously. I mean, like, for the game itself, most of the stories were based on either my personal experience or based on my friends.
Okay.
But having spent like hundreds or thousands of hours in coffee shop, there are so many stories there.
That's a long, like, time in a coffee shop.
Yeah, like a long play time for a place. Like, for example, when PUBG was happening, I remember, like, I spent whole day sitting writing in the coffee shop, and like the group next to me was like, in the afternoon it was like a bunch of medical students who take break by playing PUBG together, and at night it was like a bunch of older people, like not really older people, like people around my age, hanging out playing PUBG.
Okay.
There are also cases where I was like sitting next to a couple, And the girlfriend just found out the boyfriend might be cheating.
Oh, man.
And I was just like using my headphone. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, you turn the music off, but you keep your headphones on. Like, oh, I'm not listening.
That happens so many times. So, yeah, I guess there's this kind of charm with coffee shop.
Yeah.
It's just hard to ignore.
I guess, are those the craziest stories you heard in the coffee shop, or did you hear ever anything that was like, wow?
I mean, like, things like a mistress wanted to come out to the wife of a guy. It happens in my regular coffee shop. Celebrity visiting, it happens like once a week at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like the craziest thing. I'm sure there are some crazy things happen, but there is just too many things happen when I visited that place. So yeah, it's hard to point out.
Yeah, and when you're there, do you have a notebook that you're writing in?
Of course not. I'm not that Freya, you know. Okay.
So you're writing on a laptop?
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, like, later on, I start using iPad because it's easier to bring around.
Okay.
But yeah, most of the time I use laptop.
So, presumably, this coffee shop obsession was where the idea of Coffee Talk kind of came from.
The funny thing is, it's not. It was based on bar.
Okay, so let's go back in time a little bit to young Fahmi and the moment where games come into your life, I suppose. What do you remember about that?
I mean, like, as far as I remember, I've been playing games since before I can read. And although most of the time it was like my cousin gave me a controller and it was unplugged and I just pretend I thought I was playing the game, but happens.
And he's clapping along.
Oh, definitely not. He's not that kind. But yeah, I mean, like, I remember, like, I learned a lot about games and anime from my cousin. I think my first exposure was Super Mario Bros. Yeah, that one. And I mean, my parents also play casual puzzle games like Puzzle Bobble or like even when I was a kid, I had a Super NES, and my parents are actually playing with me. Like they also play games at that time.
That's unusual.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, my mom played Tony Hawk's Pro Skater better than me. When I was a kid.
Yeah, not now.
Not now, yeah, definitely not. But yeah, I guess my first exposure was...
Did you have quite young parents then?
Not really. I mean, like... I mean, like, even for the local standard, they're pretty old. I mean, like, the age gap is pretty far, but they're not young. They're definitely not young, but they still play games until now.
Okay.
I mean, not.
Have they played your games?
I mean, they play casual games, but.
Okay.
And they're the reason why I can work in games. So, yeah, they're pretty open about it. I mean, they also fund my hobby. Like, without them, I won't be able to afford Super NES and PlayStation as a kid, right? So, yeah, those two are the only consoles I had. And of course, being in Indonesia, everything relies on piracy. We don't even know that original games exist. Like, all we know are these 50 cents games that cost per disc. Like, so if I want to play JRPG, I need to spend more money than if I want to play like action games that only has one disc, things like that. And I guess that's my cousin introduced me to video games. I started playing Super NES. That's the one I own. And then I start playing the first PlayStation. I love playing JRPGs so much as a kid. And
Do you remember the games that kind of shaped your childhood?
I guess there are two games that I can say shaped my childhood. It's Final Fantasy IX and the Suikoden series. They're just like... they opened my eyes to the possibility of storytelling in video games, because the first 5 years of me playing games were like platformer, action games, sports, racing, things like that, or fighting games. So they have stories, but, you know, not like in-depth stories. And then I was exposed to, I don't play PC until I'm like teenager. So they exposed me to this kind of, oh, how a game that have a believable world, a game that has a world that you want to live in, a game that has like, you can get money and buy stuff in the game to make you stronger and so on. It has story, even though I don't really understand the story, but at least I enjoy it as a kid. And those, basically Final Fantasy and Suikoden really shaped me to be who I am today, I guess. They have a lot of impacts on my childhood and adulthood.
And were these the kind of formative experiences? Were these the big things that, at what point did you think, I need to work in games? Are these the games that pushed you towards that?
Okay. So, while my parents are pretty open about video games, they have strict schedules, right? So I can only play games on the weekend or on holidays. But they also gave me money to buy food at school, which I don't use. I use them to buy video game magazines and manga. And because I cannot play games every day, I spend more time reading the magazines rather than playing the games.
Ah, okay.
Like, I even have, like, I also get internet connection. Like, I can only browse internet, like, 30 minutes a week. And I use those time to, like, copy-paste all the walkthrough from Game Facts to Microsoft Word. And I spend, like, my weekdays reading the walkthroughs to prepare myself to play the games on weekend. So I guess that's one thing that kind of shaped me to be a writer, because I read more about games than playing games as a kid.
Right.
And thanks to those magazines too, I realized, okay, these games were made by humans. There are people behind these games. Like the names like Hironobu Sakaguchi, Hideo Kojima, and so on. And by the way, because I live in Indonesia, somehow Japanese games have way bigger impacts than Western games here.
Okay.
So I start noticing that, okay, these people exist. I guess I can be one of them. So it was around early teenagers. I decided I want to make games. And
so now I've read another, I'm not sure if it's a story. I'm not sure if I would describe it like that. But there's a post on your blog where you are weighing up the pros and cons of growing up in Indonesia versus growing up in America and the opportunities you would have to make video games, to be successful in the video game industry. And you note all these things down about the pros, and then at the end there are no cons, because talk us through it. Talk us through your mindset there. What was it like for you trying to enter a games industry in Indonesia?
Thing is, I graduated from high school in 2008. And my parents know that I want to make games, and they support it. But when I want to study game development in university, their recommendation was just take IT, software engineering, because at that time, the game industry in Indonesia, in Southeast Asia, it's almost non-existent. Like, there's nothing heard about video games industry in the region. So my mom told me that, why don't you just learn how to code? You will need to learn how to code anyway to make games. And in case the industry is not ready, it's not grown enough by the time you need to look for a job, you can just join a software house or like a big corporates as an IT guy or something. And I took that advice. So I studied software engineering, but I still love reading articles about game development and so on. And I guess by the time I graduated, it was 2011, the industry has grown because of Flash games. Like, Flash was so big in Indonesia. Like, I think over 50% of the developers back then make Flash games. I mean, indie games were born in Flash era anyway, right? And yeah. So they started to appear, but most of them are smaller studios. And then when I have to find a place to do internship, I found out that Gameloft has a branch in Indonesia. I still have the mug, by the way. So yeah. So I joined Gameloft as a programmer doing porting for mobile Java games. Like, one game, the size is like 128 kilobytes for the whole game. So those are the things that I started working on.
And then, you can't even get a save file that small.
I mean, the save file was like 2 bytes.
Wow.
And after that, I realized that I'm a bad programmer. Like, I know how to read the code. I know how to bug fix or maybe even optimize. But when they told me, hey, make this feature or like make the control sim for this build, I was like, I don't know how to do it. So I decided to move to other division. I become a game designer at Gameloft. Spend like,
what's that like? What's, because that's quite, in my head, that's quite a shift. You're like, not going to be a programmer anymore. I'll just design games. Was it quite a big change?
Not really, because even when I was a programmer, I still work so close to the game designer, to the point like, so the way our team work is like every, so the studio only do porting to mobile games, right? And there are like hundreds of builds, and they divide it into like touchscreen, 1 megabyte, 300 kilobytes, 100 kilobytes. And I have to take care of the 100 kilobytes. I'm one of the programmers that handles that. And each category have their own game designer and artist. And I do the game design for my build because, one, it's 100 kilobyte build. It's like super low priority. Two, the game designer trusted me with it. They were just like, okay, you can do game design, so do it. It's okay. You will still need our approval, but please help us with this because we don't have enough game designer. And so even as a programmer, I help the game designer a lot. I do the game design for the porting myself. So when I have finished with my internship, I was going to continue full-time there. I told my leads that I want to be a game designer here. And basically, I need to redo the test. Imagine applying as a new employee while you are the employee of that company. So that basically was like, like at 3 p.m., the HR, hey, Fami, let's do interview. Okay. For my new job? Yes. Okay. And then I do the test outside the working hours. So yeah, I finally got the job, become a game designer for a few months. I definitely found more joy doing game design than coding.
Good.
And then I left. I left because the thing is, the town where the office, the Gameloft office, existed was it's in Yogyakarta. It's basically like a student town. The living cost.
Is that where you grew?
Oh no!
Is that where you grew up in Jakarta?
No, Jakarta is the capital city. Yogyakarta is a smaller city, like 500 kilometers away.
Okay.
Yeah, the name sounds similar, yeah. But basically, Yogyakarta is a very affordable town. I can get like a proper meal, rice, soup, and like fried for only like 20 cents. It's a very affordable. But the thing is, the minimum wage was also very, very low. Like,
right.
My first salary working in games was $150. $150. And that...
A salary? What? A year?
No. Monthly.
$150. Okay. Even so. Yeah. Even so.
But that was 3 times the minimum wages of the town.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It's a very weird place. It's a nice place, but it's not a good place to have a full-time job in.
Yeah.
So I decided to move back. Eh?
Huh? Okay. No, so you moved back.
Yeah, I moved back to Jakarta. And yeah. I started working on a local startup, doing gamification stuff and so on. And
is this Doge?
No, no. The startup already died. I also started writing blogs. The funny thing is I started writing blogs because of an article in Eurogamer. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was in 2011 or 2012. There's an interview with Hironobu Sakaguchi written by Simon Parkin. And mm-hmm. that article really, it moved me. It changed me. It opened my eyes to so many things. It was like a very beautifully written article. Simon Parkin really did a good job with the article, and Hironobu Sakaguchi really show how amazing he is as a person in that article. And I started writing blogs thanks to that article. And when the startup I work on is going to change direction, and they don't need me.
I remember the article. It's
an amazing article, right?
I was going to ask you, does it have something to do with a hairdresser?
Yep, that one, yes.
It does.
Oh man, it's such a good article. Yeah. Anyway, so the startup decided to change direction. They don't need my skill set anymore. And my boss was like, so how do you think, how do you feel working with us? And I know he's going to fire me. I was like, yeah, so I know I've been looking for new jobs because I don't think I can grow more in this place. And he was like, oh my God, thank you for thinking about that. It makes it easier. But anyway, so he cannot afford to pay like a lot of us anymore. So he has to cut a lot of the team members. But he knew that a local media, a regional media called Tekin Asia, so it's a pretty big Southeast Asia media covering startups and technology. They just bought an indie game website.
Okay.
It was a mobile game website, but they are expanding to cover PC and console, and they're looking for writers. So my ex-boss introduced me to this media, and I became a game journalist for 3.5 years.
Horrible job.
Yeah. The funny thing is I decided to be a journalist because I heard a speech by Neil Gaiman. So he shared that he became a journalist. So he wanted to tell stories. He wanted to write for TV, comic books, or films. And he became a journalist because by being a journalist, you can learn how to write. You can learn how to tell stories. You can learn from the people you meet. I can learn from people that are already successful. I can learn from people who have failed. And I got paid while doing all of that. So I became a game journalist. I learned so many things. But here's the funny thing. The more you learn about the game industry, the more you are afraid to jump in. I always wanted to start my own studio. But I was like, oh no, man. Like 95% of the studio that I heard in 2013 no longer exists now. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I became a game journalist for 3.5 years, and then Toge was around. They're already one of the biggest studio in Indonesia, and then they decided to open a publishing division. They wanted to help Indonesian games to reach global market, and they were looking for a marketing and PR person. I know it sounds weird because I started my job at Toge as a marketing and PR guy. So I joined Toge Publishing, and they have this internal game jam. Whenever they finish a project, everyone can pitch anything, including the marketing guy. He can pitch anything he wants. So I pitch a project called Project Green Tea Latte. The people love it, and it became the next full project from the studio.
So let's come back now to where did the idea come from? Because Project Green Tea Latte is one of the prototypes, I think, that goes on to become Coffee Talk. And in fact, I think you can play it on Itch now. I think there's a playable version. I'll put a link to that in the description.
Oh, my, please, no.
I won't put a link in the description.
So. I mean, it's okay, but looking back, it was horribly written, but at least it shows the main idea. It conveys what we wanted to present in Coffee Talk, I guess. But it was horribly written.
Is this before you did your role playing with?
Way before.
Okay. So you said the idea comes from being in a bar.
So the idea came from many places. The kickstart was, I always sleep late. I always work late. And it was raining. I was drinking a hot green tea latte. And I was listening to Nujabes. And I was like, this feels amazing. This feels so cozy. And it was around the time where the YouTube started to be filled with lo-fi chill hop videos.
And I was like, I know the channels well.
Yeah. So I thought, like, how can I emulate this feeling in video games? And then I also remember, like, I visited Japan a couple years back, and I visited a place. There's a bar in Tokyo, a video game bar called Flashback. So the bar owner, he's a Frenchman who has been living in Tokyo for 14 years. I think now it's like 20 years. And he used to be a game programmer. Like, he used to work on Gotham. And I spoke with him, and then more people come to the bar. And I met an old Japanese guy, drunk, like heavily drunk, gifting the bartender, hey, I bought you something. And it was like, I think it was a Dreamcast CD, like a rare old retro Dreamcast CD to be displayed in the bar. And I spoke with all the visitors. I spoke in broken Japanese, and they're speaking in broken English. And somehow it feels nice. It feels amazing. And from those two things, from my experience at the bar and my experience drinking green tea latte at night, came Project Green Tea Latte. Game about talking to random people in a cozy place.
And what was the development like? Because I read a quote from Chris Anthony. who was the co-founder of the studio, Toge. And he said that Coffee Talk, quote, almost killed our studio, quote, which sounds quite dramatic.
Yeah, it is. It's true. It's real. Like,
what happened?
We almost ran out of money.
Okay.
The thing is, Toge never did any story narrative-based game. Like, before Coffee Talk, Toge was known for Infectonator. It's an arcade game about spreading zombie virus. So we never...
Topical.
Topical. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we never had any experience in making narrative-based games. And we thought, okay, the game, the scope of the game is pretty small. We try to make it as small as possible. And we only need to write dialogues. We just need to write. It's easy, right? And the initial timeline for the game was 6 months. We ended up spending 2 years developing the game.
Wow.
Yeah, because we don't know how to make this kind of games. That's why for the next games in Toge's portfolio, when the pass was around, it doesn't have any text, because writing is just... Especially because we have to write in English and it's not our first language.
Which I forget, because, you know, we're having such a fluid conversation.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, like, writing was hell. And then there's also, like, communication stuff and expectation. But
yeah, so this is kind of your project. You're the writer and designer.
Yep.
And as the project starts to stretch out a bit and go past 6 months, and people are looking at you and are like, how much longer is this going to take?
Yep.
That must have been quite stressful for
you. Oh, man. Like, one of the, basically the lead artist in the studio, he saw me one day and he just said, I don't want to be you right now. Because I look like, even my COO at that time, he was like, Fami, you look like a mess. I know, I am a mess right now. It was like, for a very relaxing game, it wasn't a relaxing experience to develop this game.
But, you know, you're smiling about it
now.
Oh,
yeah, so exactly.
You've bounced back, I suppose.
You have to.
So there are lots of lovely, touching moments in Coffee Talk. I was sharing one, actually, with my partner the other day, one that stuck out to me. A young woman comes in after an argument with her father, and she ends up talking to a police officer about it, who is just someone who happens to be in the coffee shop, is not there on like official business. And he's a father, and he says some wise things. And one of the wise things he says is he talks about arguments as being positive things, which I can imagine everyone's had an argument here who's listening or watching to this. They don't feel like positive things at the time, but he talks about them as things or ways of getting to know people. You don't know someone until you've seen them in conflict, he says, or something like that. And as long as you resolve it, that's the key point. And I'll remember that. I will take that piece of advice from a game with me in the rest of my life. When I'm having arguments with people, I can tell them, this is good. This is enjoyable. You're enjoying yourself. But these kind of wise bits of wisdom, did they come from you, or are they things you've picked up? Where did you get that from?
It's a mix of so many things. Sometimes I might have heard about them from a friend. Sometimes I might have seen them in a movie, but I don't know. It just happens like, it just happens like, okay, I guess this is what you can talk to people who is facing this kind of problem. And I cross-check with the team. Do you think it's good if he said it, something like this? And if they agreed, why? If they don't agree, why? And most of them came naturally. I guess simply because I've consumed so many films, games, and any other form of stories in my life.
Yeah. What's your favorite piece of feedback you've had about the game? I see you still sharing bits of fan art now where people are. And I've talked to actually a contributor of ours, and she absolutely adores the game. She talks about it as one of her favorite ever games. What kind of feedback did you get? What comes to your mind when I ask you that?
Feedback as in during the development time? Or after?
I think more after after the game is released and people are playing it.
So there are so many people that said the game helps them with so many problems, with their anxiety, with their lack of sleep. Like, I remember one person sent me a DM saying that she couldn't sleep at night and she has to work the next day. And then she decided to just boot up the game, and she felt calmer because she saw friends. She saw the characters in the game as friends. And it gave her peace. Peace of mind, at least. Does it make her sleep? It kind of does, but not directly put her into sleep. But it helps her with her troubles. And I guess this kind of thing that stay with me, I guess. Those kind of things. Of course, the funny thing is, I think right now Coffee Talk is like 94% positive on Steam. And most of it I remember are the negative reviews. So that also stays feedbacks. Like, I remember there's this one, I won't name names, but they're pretty famous bunch of people in games that said the game tried to be horny but afraid to do so.
Okay.
It made me laugh so much. Like, they're not wrong, but it's like, when I first heard it, I was like, what the hell are you talking about? But now when I heard those lines again, I was like, I mean, they're not wrong, they're right. So yeah, that's just one thing that stays.
It's a vulnerable time, isn't it? Releasing a game like that, particularly one you've had such a personal hand in creating and shaping and bringing to life. I was talking to someone who released the game, and it surprised me, and they talked about release actually being quite a tricky time to deal with.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Did you find that? How did you deal with release and those kind
by leaving the company? like it's true, because by the time I was done with most of my work at Coffee Talk, I thought like, so funny thing, Coffee Talk came out right on my 30th birthday, and like a few months before that, I was thinking like, hey, I always wanted to make my own games, my own studio, right? It was the reason why I became a journalist in the first place, to learn from people. And now I've been in the game industry for almost 9 years, and I still don't have the courage to start my own studio. And then I think like, I'm not married yet. I'm still single. I don't have any like financial responsibilities other than to myself. And I'm not 30 yet, just like a few months before 30. And I actually told my mom like, so mom, what if I stop paying for the bills to make my own games for like maybe a year or two? And she said, it's like, do it. You're still young and you still don't have kids. Just go for it. And I decided like after finishing my work at Coffee Talk, like, all the stories are done. Basically the games are ready to be released. I even have planned like the social media posts up until me leaving the company, and I already wrote the press release and so on. I decided to leave the studio. So when they have to click release on Steam, I was not there.
Ah, it's a brave decision.
It's kind of stupid decision, I guess. But I will do it again. I definitely will do it again if I have to.
So at what point do you start thinking about what comes after, which is a double entendre if ever I've heard one? So are you already thinking about a new game at this point?
I already have something in mind. So I was thinking of an idea. So the funny thing is, the idea came from a Tinder date.
Wow. Yeah.
So I met this girl, and she used to be a radio announcer. And her voice was so soothing, like, so how are you doing? How's your day? And I thought, what if I play a game while a voice like this is always commenting on what I'm doing in the game? And then I started working on the idea, how can this game can be built from this idea? And those ideas become Project Heartbreak. Project Heartbreak came before What Comes After.
Okay. So, because I was going to say, if What Comes After was inspired by a Tinder date, that would be one hell of a Tinder date.
Yeah, I know, right? So Project Heartbreak, we started working on Project Heartbreak. I started asking some people, like, here's the thing, I've been in the game industry for almost 9 years. So I thought, I can make games by myself. I just need to invite one programmer and one artist, and that's it. And how wrong I was. Like, the first few months of the project was hell. I basically just like wasted all of my life savings on the first prototype, just to prepare for a pitch deck of the game. And by the third month, I was like, we cannot go on like this. No publisher wanted this kind of, I mean, like, they love the idea, but they need something more concrete than something tangible. They need something playable. But to make something playable, you need money, and I ran out of money. And so I decided, okay, we're going to make smaller project. I'm going to invite. So I still invite the programmer, because the idea is we have to make something based on the same code engine as Project Heartbreak. So this game will be built on what we made for Project Heartbreak. And when this game done, we can reuse the code for Project Heartbreak. So there's that. And then I need to find artist and audio person. It has to be free. It has to be collaboration because I cannot afford anyone at that time. So I asked, like, I know a friend of mine, he runs a studio called Rolling Glory. So it's like a digital agency. They're doing digital agency stuff. But they also made games with Toge in the past. But the game did okay, but not really successful. But they still want to make games, yeah.
So where does the idea come from for the game? Is this an idea you've had for a long time, or it's just an idea on demand?
It's a mix of two things. So one thing is, I think like around early 2020 or late 2019, there's a viral tweet in Indonesia about a guy who overslept inside a train, and then he woke up and the train was empty. And then he tried to call for help, call the numbers written on the poster and so on, but nobody was answering. So he made a tweet about it. It went viral and then he was safe. But I thought, what if this guy wakes up in the train and it's filled with ghosts? And the second idea is from my favorite scene from Spirited Away. So
it's very Ghibli-like.
Yeah, so in Spirited Away, Chihiro, the main character, went on a train ride. Like a very surrealistic train ride where everyone is just like shadowy kind of people. I try to imagine, what if we can talk to these people inside the train? And basically I combined those two ideas and it became What Comes After.
Because it's quite a tricky subject that you deal with in the game.
Yeah.
A girl contemplating or having suicidal thoughts, even though the game isn't really about that. It's more uplifting than that sounds. It's more about her rediscovering, you know, the kind of joys of life or the joys of herself, if you like, through talking to these spirits as she progresses along the train. But it's a tricky subject because, of course, people are suffering from thoughts like this in real life. And the moment you step into this area, you connect with those people somehow, or, you know, you're starting to deal with real life events that people have lived through. Did you ever feel that kind of sense of responsibility or that, I don't know,
here's the thing,
perhaps
the one of the main reason why, other than the financial reason, one of the main reason why I decided to write this story is because I have a friend who experienced what Fifi is experiencing. Fifi, the main character of What Comes After, like, I wrote Fifi based on her. And basically, I made that game as some kind of love letter to my friend. Like, this is the thing that we talk about in real life. Like, whenever she had her episode, this is what we talk about. This is how we deal with things. And I just wanted to give her a different perspective. Like, hey, if you see yourself, but from different perspective, like, this is kind of, you are all right. You're not a burden to anyone. Basically, that's the main idea. That's one of the single keyword I wanted to tell through Vivi, is that she's an amazing person and she's not a burden to anyone. And that's the thing that I wanted to say to my friend. And that's basically, by making the story, I wanted to connect to one person. But apparently it affects so many more people than that. Yeah.
Did your friend play it?
Oh yeah, of course.
What did she think?
Oh, she loves it.
did she know? Had you told her this was...
Oh yeah, she knew. And she actually helped me with the game too.
Okay, I'm glad that she was aware of everything that was going on.
Yeah, when I first showed her the early draft, she was like, oh, are you talking about me in this game? And she was like, yeah, I know.
So I can't believe it's been a year since the game.
Shit, yeah, it is. Damn.
Came out, which is, it seems like just yesterday. I suppose it was the weird invisible year that we've kind of had. How did the game do? Was it successful?
Surprisingly, yes. I mean, like, the main reason we started making this is because we wanted to learn how to make games properly from zero, and hoping that the money from the game can be used to make the bigger game, to make Project Heartbreak, right? Mm. The game was more than successful than we thought, but it's still not enough to make Project Heartbreak. Like, making games are really super expensive. Like, even successful game won't be able to afford making new games. Thankfully, we got a publisher for that game, though, Project Heartbreak. And, And one of the...
Can you say who the publisher is?
Oh, yeah. It's Fellow Traveler.
Ah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. When we started working on What Comes After, we made some rules. First, it has to be a short game. It will be $5. It will be... The initial plan was like 15 minutes long, but then somehow the game became 1 hour. The development time should not be more than 3 months. We ended up working for 3.5 months, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Compared to 6 months to 2 years in Coffee Talk, yeah, this is way better.
So Project Heartbreak... Mm-hmm. So this is the big game. I was thinking perhaps it might be something of a shorter length, like What Comes After, but it sounds like it's a much bigger thing. Tell us about the game? What is it?
I mean, I cannot say much about the game right now, but we're going to officially announce it in December, hopefully, yeah.
Okay.
But it's bigger. I mean, compared to other indie games, it's still like under 10 hours. It's probably like...
Yeah.
4 or 5 hours long, but that's for one route, and the game will have multiple endings. So I guess you can say like it has, hopefully it will be around like 12 to 15 hours long game. It will be an adventure game set in Jakarta, and it will be about love, death, and moving on.
Are these things, topics that are personal to you, or is that...
It's because there are a lot of roots in the game, right? Some of them are personal, some of them are like things that it happens to a lot of us. And some of them are like pieces of things we know, either from friends or through our own personal experience. It's like mix and match of things.
Yeah. Do you ever, because it's this kind of theme, it's not the same as in other games, but you are tackling themes that, you know, are present in real life or maybe present in your life at some time. And some of the characters in the game are you, some are your friends. Where do you draw the line, if you do at all, between what you share in the game? How much are you kind of willing to give of yourself, if you like, to a game? Do you ever...
It's actually another inspiration I got from the same video Neil Gaiman talk that started my whole career as a game journalist, in which he said that once you feel like you've shown too much of yourself, as if you're like walking naked on the sidewalk, maybe it's the time when you're starting to get it right. So... I tend to show too much. In fact, I think I show more of myself in the games than if we're talking in real life. There are like things that I won't be honest in real life, but I will be super duper honest in the story I made. And it's okay because most people won't connect those dots. They won't like immediately think, oh yeah, this is funny. No, they won't immediately think of that. They will think this is as a work of fiction.
It's interesting. Sometimes it's easier, safer, to share something quietly.
Yeah, and... I believe to be a storyteller, you either have to be a very honest person or a very good liar. And I'm a very bad liar, so I guess I just need to be too honest.
So you've been in the industry for
10 years now.
10 years. 10 years now. And you've worn many different hats in
that
sense.
Many hats.
So what have you learned about making games in that time? What are the lessons that you really remember? And I suppose from that, what advice would you give to someone who was keen on following the same path?
Okay, I guess making games is definitely hard. It's hard. It will make you cry a lot if you're like me. And
that's not going to make them want to do it.
But it's, yeah, I mean, like, it's been something. I always love to tell stories. So having being able to tell stories through games was like dreams come true. Especially when those stories connect to people. Like, there are days when I feel super down. And then somebody came to my DM saying that how Coffee Talk or What Comes After helped them. And it made my week better. That's thanks to video games. And if there's one piece of advice I can give to anyone who wanted to be in games, is it sounds so silly, but just be nice. Be nice. It's like be nice is like the best marketing, development, project management, and writing advice I can give, because the game industry is so small. Like if we're talking about Indonesian game industry, almost everybody knows each other. And if we're going to talk about global game industry, it's the same case. It's like super small. Everyone knows each other. And be a nice person is always a good thing. It helps you in your personal life. It can help you in your professional life too. And be nice. I mean, being a nice person is a very good marketing asset. And I sound like a very evil capitalist right now.
You don't. I think that's very wise advice. Almost as if I was in a coffee shop and you were the barrister giving me the advice. So I've got a few small kind of final questions that I ask everyone I talk to. So the first of these is first game. What was your first game?
Super Mario Bros.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And the second one is best game. What was your best game?
It's not best game, but best thing ever is Final Fantasy IX.
Okay. And the last question, appropriately enough, is what was your last game?
I mean, like the latest game I played?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm preparing myself for Elden Ring, so I just finished Bloodborne like a few weeks ago, and I'm playing Dark Souls 3 right now.
Nice. So, Fahmy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for the invite.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I feel like I'm going to go and play Coffee Talk now and try and see you everywhere. Where's he talking about his life? What's this? Where is he?
Trust me, most of the things written are like pretty random. Like sometimes I don't put too much thought in it, and I just like, oh yeah, I think it's nice to write this.
I'm also going to try a green tea latte, which I've never tried before.
It's the best drink ever.
Green tea is not such a big thing here. I mean, it is a thing, but it's not such a big thing.
I mean, like, if I would recommend not making like original green tea latte, just buy the sachet one, like the instant green tea latte. It's actually the best kind of green tea latte.
Ah,
because it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to pull if you're making it from scratch.
Yeah. Okay, I'll bear that in mind. Fahmy, thank you so much again. And we will look forward to hearing more about Project Heartbreak in December.
Yep. Please.
Bye for now.
Be excited.
See you later.
See you later. Bye.